Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual. And, Jim, we start with a slew of good news in the Republicans' quest to regain the majority in the U.S. Senate. Perhaps the best news that we discovered on Monday was a new poll from High Point, and they found out that North Carolina Democratic Senator Kay Hagan, her approval rating is at 36%. The bad news is that it's actually up from 33% back in January, but her disapproval is at 47%. Those are not good numbers for an incumbent. She is still neck and neck with pretty much all the Republicans who are vying for the GOP nomination. But in addition to the fact that Kay Hagan's in big trouble, there's a Rasmussen survey showing that Shelley Capito is up by 14 points in West Virginia, almost at 50% in that race, as well as a Republican poll out of Arkansas showing Tom Cotton up 4 on Democratic incumbent Mark Pryor. So these are races that obviously at least two of those Republicans will have to have if they want a shot at the majority. But the good news is they're heading in the right direction.
Yeah, if there's any kind of theme that comes through all these polls, Greg, it's that we talk about the importance of candidate quality. We talk about the importance of a red state Democrat being able to emphasize where they differ from the administration. That may, over time, that may be becoming moot, that ultimately these are all states that are, if not red states, you know, I mean, Obama won North Carolina back in 2008, lost it in 2012. West Virginia, Arkansas, North Carolina, all fairly Republican at the presidential level and increasingly in House races as well. The party brand is just incompatible with winning statewide in places like this. I thought it was kind of interesting that in Arkansas, Pryor is now running ads saying that Tom Cotton wants to destroy Social Security. His Social Security reform plan would end up hurting grandma and grandpa. I think it's really interesting that right after he and a bunch of other Senate Democrats write to HHS lamenting the cuts to Medicare, now he's accusing the other guy of being, he's going to cut Social Security. Because I guess the idea is that my cuts to programs that help elderly, they're not so bad. But that guy's potential cuts, those would be really terrible. We can't let that go through. Nothing, you know, shocking in these polls, but it indicates what we generally think, which is that in the states that are generally Republican-friendly territory in 2014, Republicans are doing pretty good, obviously, very early in the cycle, but room for quite a few pickups here, and that's what Republicans need to do.
Good news in Arkansas. Yes, it's a Republican poll, but Mark Pryor only at 42%. That's a bad number for an incumbent. Really bad news for Kay Hagan. She's 6 points behind Obama's approval in North Carolina. So good luck there, Senator. All right, on to martini number two now, and we head once again to the often located in the bad martini topic of Obamacare. Jim had a great post on Campaign Spot yesterday about how the cost of the Obamacare cloud, the computing cloud, 5 times what was budgeted for that. And here's another piece of news that we get from Fox News, and it's coming from the administration's own Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. 11 million small business employees may see their premiums rise under the law. The report found that 65% of small businesses would see a spike in insurance premiums, and about 35% of small businesses would see lower rates for plans covering about 6 million people. So that's obviously pretty close to a 2-to-1 split there in the wrong direction. So the individual market got creamed last year. Now it looks like small businesses are about to take one in the gut this year, Jim.
Yeah, and I think what's really most worth pointing out about this is that, yeah, sure, you know, some people might have lower premiums. I think they put that figure in the 5 million range. But 11 million are seeing higher premiums. So that's 6 million people who are getting a worse deal than they had before. And so one of the things that, you know, was it's now so clear about the selling of Obamacare was that they downplayed and ignored any costs or consequences of these changes. When I mentioned the observation about the cloud computing costs going up like 5 to 6 times what they had originally estimated, we missed by that gargantuan a sum. One of two things is going on. Either you're completely incompetent, you have no idea how much it costs, and you're just guessing, and you ended up guessing a number that was way lower than that. Or you knew it was going to be really expensive, and you knew it would be a big controversial figure, so you basically lie. And you tell people, oh, it's only going to cost $9 million, and it turns out it costs closer to $60 million. In this case, you know, folks on the right have been saying, wait a minute, this is not going to be easy for small business you're requiring them to add, you know, more coverage, more expensive coverage, and lo and behold, the employees are going to see higher premiums as well. Another sign of just how bad Obamacare is, and, you know, I suppose this is good news and it gives all those, you know, Republican candidates something to talk about, in this, but this is not, we're not going to have that magic wand to wave everything and go back to where it was. And, you know, we're going to be a long, hard effort to undo all the damage that Obamacare has already inflicted upon the nation's healthcare system.
All right, on to martini number three now. And if there's anything parents love, it's other people telling them how to raise their kids. Jim, now the state of New York is considering legislation. We'll see if it actually gets anywhere. That would mandate parenting classes. Here's Fox 5 in New York, first of all, with a summary of the bill.
New York Senator Ruben Diaz introduced the bill, which would require parents of elementary school children to attend a minimum of 4 parent support classes. If parents don't go, sixth graders won't move on to seventh grade.
And if that weren't depressing enough about the government's intrusion into our lives, here's a couple of folks that they interviewed for this story just on the street. Don't know if they're parents or not, but listen to how they rationalize government's attempt to get further and further into our personal lives.
You need a license to fish, but anyone can be a parent. And there are some really bad parents out there.
I think every good parent would admit that there's always something more that they can learn. So people that are truly offended by it are probably the ones that need it the most.
Jim, you've got a kid in school. Mine's not that old yet. I'm sure this is just rubbing you the right way.
Wow, I just want to find that guy and just shake him vigorously and say, what the heck is wrong with you? One of the things that we on the right tend to underestimate when we're dealing with the left, and obviously the nanny state impulse, is that the folks who come up with these nanny state ideas of having the government step in and, you know, save you from your own bad habits, save you from your bad dietary choices and things like that. Usually there's a real problem, right? I mean, we have a real problem with obesity in this country. We do have a real problem with people having bad judgment. We do have a problem with people not saving for retirement. Okay, you know, there are plenty of problems in life. The problem is that they always come and say, well, let's have the government step in and take it over for you. There are, sad to say, people who are terrible parents. We have a system in place for removing, you know, their custody of their children. I suppose you could say the bar is set fairly high. It's got to get close to abuse, not merely just being a incompetent parent is not usually enough to get the law to step in and remove that person's authority and you know, legal custody of a child. But the idea that some government bureaucrat is going to know better on how to parent, let's just say I remain unpersuaded of that. And it's just kind of mind-boggling that we would kind of believe that the state is going to come in and, you know, teach people to be a better parent. Now, there used to be people, you know, various forces in life that would teach you how to be a better parent. Ideally, your parents. Ideally, you know, your neighbors, your churches, these little Burkean platoons. Basically, hopefully, when you are a parent, if you're surrounded by other people being good parents, and you talk about, you know, whether you're in the little league stands or, you know, hanging out with your buddies or something like that. I mean, you can find other role models. The idea that the state is going to come in and provide you with that role model is a terrible idea. I'm kind of stunned by this. I think it says something about the dramatic shift in the culture of New York City, that what used to be the, you know, get the heck out of my way and leave me alone culture, the toughness of New York City, has completely eroded to the point where, like, they're now saying, yeah, you know, I think the state should teach you how to be a better parent. And if you don't, there's probably something wrong with you. You're probably an abusive parent yourself if you're not on board with this. So there you go. So, you know, there's kind of this, you know, creepy quasi, I won't use all the words that probably would get, you know, people would find inflammatory. I don't want to invoke Godwin's law or anything like that. But let's just say that there's a certain disturbing trust in the state's ability to know what to do in these circumstances that I think is undeserved and an unnerving sign for the future of New York State and anywhere else that this could be taking root.
As we exit here, Jim, we can't let it go. Big, sad day for our generation yesterday with the passing of Harold Ramis. Big hits with Stripes and Animal House and Vacation and Groundhog Day. My personal favorite, also probably my all-time favorite movie, although not the highest quality necessarily, Caddyshack, classic. It was definitely our favorite. Me and my circle of friends in college. I'm sure you've got a favorite in there as well.
My first thought was to come to Ghostbusters. I always think of him as Egon Spengler, even though he probably has, you know, greater accomplishments behind the camera as a director. The other thing I just kind of add about looking at the body of work, somebody once said that, you know you're a genius when Stripes is maybe the sixth best movie you've ever made. What's funny is that they're about very different people, from Groundhog Day to Ghostbusters to Animal House. But there's kind of this theme of good-natured underdogs. There's usually kind of a loser or slacker mentality to the heroes of Harold Ramis' movies. But they tend to come around, and, you know, like obviously Jonah Goldberg goes on at length about Groundhog Day being one of the most fascinating and philosophical movies of all time. The idea of this sense you're reliving the same day over and over again until you achieve a certain level of enlightenment and being, you know, kind to others and understanding and all that stuff. But until Bill Murray learns how to be a better person, he's destined to keep undergoing the same experiences over and over again. So I think there's always a lot more going on in Harold Ramis's films than they appeared to be, these kind of goofy, wacky comedies. Probably what makes his work stand out from a lot of other goofy, wacky comedies of the same time period. So he will very much be missed, and I was not the least bit upset or surprised that the president even issued a statement and said that he would achieve eternal consciousness, or whatever the line from Caddyshack is. So yes. He's got that going for him.
Total consciousness. So he's got that going for him, which is nice. All right. On that note, Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Indeed, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.